This is the first election in this century on the Republican side of the machine that Bob Ehrlich has not been running for governor of Maryland. So we have in our series of conversations with a candidate running for governor with us today, Larry Hogan, who is founder, president, and CEO of the Hogan Companies, former appointment secretary for Governor Robert Ehrlich, and candidate for governor of Maryland. Good to have you in the studio, Larry. Welcome.
Well, good morning. Great to be here.
And Boyd Rutherford joins us. Boyd Rutherford is a former Ehrlich administrator, cabinet secretary. He's an attorney, former associate administrator of U.S. General Services and Administration, assistant secretary for USDA, and candidate for lieutenant governor. Good to have you in the studio as well, Boyd.
Well, thank you. Good morning.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. You can email me, steinershow@gmail.com, and also tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888, and join us here. And good to have you both in the studio.
Hey, it's great to be here.
So where do we begin this conversation on your journey to become the nominees? First of all, it's fair to say we both at this point are front runners, but we've seen what happens in other states, which front runners don't always win. So talk about where you think you are in this race right now, Larry.
Well, all the polls show that we're pretty far ahead in the race for the Republican nomination, but we're not taking anything for granted. So we're working as hard as we possibly can. We're going to challenge every single vote. Boyd and I are in the middle of this is day 11. On a 14-day, 24-jurisdiction, 100-stop, whistle-stop bus tour.
Wow.
We're meeting thousands of people all
across. Is your bus outside?
The bus is parked out front.
Yep. And couldn't get in the lot, though. But
we couldn't fit in the lot, so we have it out on the street. But, yeah, we're working very hard. You know, we're finding people everywhere across the state who really want to see a change of direction, and we're encouraged by the reception we're receiving.
So I think there probably are a lot of people who want to see a change of direction in Maryland. Of course, that can be defined many ways by
sure.
different ways by many people. What that means, and I'm curious what you think you bring to the table here with that. I mean, what is so now, Boyd? I mean, what you chose to run? You didn't have to be lieutenant governor candidate with Larry Hogan,
right?
But why did you do that? What do you think? What do you think you're offering here?
Well, I mean, that's two questions. First is he asked me. That's part of it. And twisted my arm a little
bit. The arm a little bit.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You knew each other in the administration.
He was sort of, we dragged him kicking and screaming, actually. But yeah, we were good friends and cabinet secretaries together. So.
Right. So
you were secretary of?
General Services. Department of General Services.
Right, right.
Yeah. When Larry asked me, it took a lot of thought. It was something that I had not really thought seriously about in terms of running for office. I think like anyone, every now and then you're sitting at your kitchen table and say, if I were in control, I'd do X, but I really didn't seriously think about it. The family was supportive, and I said, this is a time when I think we can make a difference. And what difference we bring, both Larry and I, we've worked in state government. We understand how the executive branch is supposed to operate, and we know some of the challenges associated with running government and being effective and delivering the services to the community and to the Marylanders. And we know where some of the waste is. We've seen it. We've seen it in government. We tried to address it when we were there, and we think we can have a better, a larger impact going back.
And just as importantly, the two of us have never held elective office, and we've—
That's right. I was about to say that.
We've got a lot of diverse private sector experience, so we not only know how the government works and how to solve some of these problems, but we know how these decisions affect people in the real world.
So let's go to the phones here. Jeremy, you're on the air.
Hi. Now that even Democrats are realizing we need to cut taxes, one of their candidates, Doug Gansler, is saying we should cut the corporate income tax from 8.25 to 6%. Do you agree with him? And what's your plan to give businesses some relief?
Larry?
Well, actually, I think it's Doug Gansler who agrees with us, because I've been leading the fight on this issue for about 4 years, and Doug is fairly new to the issue. But, you know, I founded a group called Change Maryland that's been focused on these fiscal issues, and we held an economic summit on improving Maryland's economic competitiveness, and we talked about these issues. The O'Malley-Brown administration increased the corporate tax rate from 6 to 8.25%. They increased 40 other taxes, including the personal income tax and many others, and it's crushed middle-class families, and it's really hurt our business community as well. We've lost 6,500 businesses, 100,000 jobs, and we've had the largest mass exodus of taxpayers fleeing our state of any state in the Mid-Atlantic region. So getting the business community back on track, attracting businesses and helping them grow and create more opportunities and more jobs for our citizens is one of our top priorities.
So do you want to add anything to that before we move on?
Well, I was just going to say it's not just a question of just cutting the tax back to 6% is to make ourselves, the state, competitive with the states around us. Virginia's corporate tax is lower. New York even cut their corporate income tax at the same time that the Brown-O'Malley administration increased the corporate tax. So we don't want Maryland to be a flyover state when it comes to businesses thinking to move into the region to take advantage of federal contracting or whatever the case may be. They're going to Virginia, and we need to reverse that.
And but many of these 40 tax increases have been regressive taxes that have really hurt people at the lower end of the income scale. So we want to work on rolling some of those back as well.
I mean, the other Democratic candidates who was on here the other week, earlier this week actually, Heather Mazier, one of the things that delegate said was that she thinks one of the things to address that would be you have to consolidate what the state does because people have too many things in their way when it comes to building a business in Baltimore, five or six different agencies all telling you different things about how you can do and what hurdles you have to pass, what fees you have to pay. If you made it simpler, it might also not just address the tax question. It makes it easier for companies to come in.
Well, on that particular point, we would agree, I think, completely with Delegate Mazier.
Other things you would disagree with Delegate Mazier?
There's a few issues that we don't see eye to eye on, but I'll tell you what, she's run a very aggressive campaign. I think she's smart and articulate, and on this issue, we agree because it's very, very difficult to do business. It's not just the tax structure, but our regulatory environment. It's so difficult to go through the process. And that's something we want to streamline. We want to try to make it easier for Maryland businesses to grow.
I do want to go back to the phones here, but let me ask this question because you mentioned your group Change Maryland. And there's been some criticism that you started this organization, Change Maryland, that actually most of your opponents in the primary gave money to, thinking it was about changing the nature of the state of Maryland and taxes. And then you turn – our argument is you turn the organization into your campaign fund to push your campaign, and if that wasn't illegal, it was at least unethical.
Well, I think that was just kind of whining from folks whose campaigns have failed.
Well, what do you think it's whining? I mean
– it's just completely off base. So almost 4 years ago, I founded Change Maryland to try to bring fiscal responsibility and common sense to Annapolis. I think we've been successful at changing the dialogue here. As you mentioned earlier, Doug Gansler is now talking about many of the things that we've championed for 3 years. But we grew into the largest and fastest growing grassroots organization in state history, 97,000 people. Nearly half of them are Democrats and independents. We're nonpartisan. And I think we've had a real impact on the discussion here in Maryland, and we're continuing to do that. Many of the folks involved in our effort, thousands of them, encouraged me to get involved in this race to run for governor because, quite frankly, we can't change Maryland without changing governors.
So open the phones here? 410-319-8888. I have another question about that, but let's get to phones, as I promised. 410-319-8888. Catherine in Rockville, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes.
Hi, Catherine.
Earlier you were talking about waste in Maryland, and I'm sure we both can agree that it's frustrating. We keep on spending in Maryland and just can't seem to learn our lesson. Now, I've seen the talk about expanding to universal pre-K on the Democratic side, and I like that as a goal. We want to invest in education, but I just don't see how we can afford it. We've been taxed enough already. Would you support or oppose that as governor?
Well, I think Boyd and I agree very much with your position. I mean, certainly, who could oppose pre-K? I mean, everybody would like to have pre-K for their kids, but the bottom line is, Maryland is in a terrible economic straits. We have a $400 million structural deficit right now. We've taxed people to death with 40 consecutive tax hikes that have taken nearly $10 billion out of the pockets of struggling Maryland families and small businesses. And what you have is pandering politicians on the left who are just promising things that they can't possibly deliver and that the taxpayers simply can't afford.
So let me push back a little bit on that. I mean, one of the few things the state has to do legally by the Constitution is to take care of education of the young people of Maryland. And many people would argue that might sound like very in terms of partisan politics, but the reality is that is our job, and that it should be starting with pre-K, and that's where we should invest the money, and not be investing in other places. And that's where it should go. So what's the argument against the public funding of pre-K?
Well, when Boyd and I were cabinet secretaries, we doubled spending on education in the Ehrlich administration. So education is a priority. But right now, we just simply can't afford this universal pre-K proposal that
the
Democrats have come up with.
What do you say to the kids who need to go to pre-K and there's no money to put them there?
Well, you have to have priorities. And K through 12 is still an issue. So are you taking money away from the K through 12 issues that we need to address? We need to address K through 12 as well. You can do all you want with pre-K, but when they get to the kindergarten or first, second grade, or the dropout rate that occurs in high school, we have to address those as well. So, you know, there's only a certain amount of money that's going to be able to go around.
So, but so basically what you both are talking about just philosophically in terms of running for governor and lieutenant governor here in this primary, and then if you win, of course, in the general election, whoever that may be you'll be facing, is you want to see government whittled down. You think government is too big, and you think it should be much smaller and doing less than it does or differently or work differently than it does.
Well, so over the past 8 years during the O'Malley-Brown administration, state spending has increased by $10 billion. It's up 36% since the Ehrlich administration. The National Governors Association, which is a nonpartisan group made up of all 50 governors, last year said that we increased spending at a rate higher than 46 other states, that only three states in the entire country increased spending the way Maryland did. We can't continue to increase spending at that rate and keep taxing our citizens and our businesses out of the state. So, yes, we do have to cut back spending. We've identified, sometimes people just talk about, in general terms, we're going to cut spending and not talk about how.
How would you do it?
We've,
how do you propose to do
it? We've gone through 300 audits that have already been done of the executive branch of state government, that were done by the federal government, and that were done by the Department of Legislative Services, that have identified, we've identified $1.75 billion worth of waste, fraud, duplication of effort, and inefficiencies that have already been identified by outside groups.
Now, fraud's a very heavy word to use.
Well, fraud is the word that the federal government used on the waste of the money.
Where do you see the fraud?
It's throughout state government. We've wasted $1.75 billion. We put out a report there. 300 different audits that we went through, and it's in every single agency, and they've been repeatedly, they've recommended that the administration take some actions to correct these issues, and they have not, but we will.
But so I'm curious, but what specifically stands out in your minds on that $1.75 billion you're talking about that you think could be cut from the state of Maryland budget? What can you give us some examples of what you would cut?
Well, one of the biggest wastes of state taxpayer money recently has been the failed rollout of the healthcare website, where we've wasted $250 million on a website that doesn't work. That's probably the biggest example. But there are a lot of very small examples in every agency that were pointed out by the federal government. For example, fraud with respect to credit cards and cash, no cash controls in any of the agencies. People were charging luxury gifts and exotic vacations on state credit cards and using cash from agencies that didn't belong to them. It was millions of dollars when you add it up.
I mean, so what would you do about that?
We're going to address all of those recommendations and the $1.75 billion and cut it as quickly as possible so that we can have more money for the priorities and run government more efficiently and more cost effectively.
And Mark, let me just give you an example when we were in state government. And the budget, my budget person, manager, looked at it as small potatoes. But when you're in an agency of 600 people and
that you ran as Secretary of General Services.
At General Services, which is a moderate to small agency compared to some of the other agencies in the or departments within the state of Maryland, we had a situation where when I came in, I wanted to see the invoices. I wanted to see what we were spending money on. We had I received a listing of individuals who had cell phones, but they also had pagers. And for some of your younger audience, they may not remember what pagers were. But the question was, why do they have both? And the budget manager said, well, you know, years ago they didn't have cell phones, so they had pagers. And I said, well, why didn't they return these pagers? Well, and his words were, that's small potatoes. That's not a big deal. And I said, yeah, but it's $10 a month for about 300 people for 3 years having these devices that they weren't using. We sent out a memo saying that you had to justify both pieces of equipment to your manager, and if not, by the end of the week, they were going to be terminated. All the pagers came back. Some of the cell phones came back. And many people told me anecdotally, they said, oh, it's been sitting in my drawer for the last 3 years. You know, so we're the state. And so if that's happening at a General Services where you have 600 versus Department of Transportation where there's over 1,200 or 2,000 employees there. Or
I think it's 12,000.
Yeah, 12,000 or human resources. You know, you start to get at real money on those types of things. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Let me go back to the phones here. 410-319-8888 and Madeline in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm excited that we finally have a candidate running that will stand up for strong family values. Will you work to defend marriage as governor?
You know, the voters of Maryland have already decided that issue, and it's really not an issue of this campaign.
So the answer is no?
Well, I didn't like the question. So the answer is that's not an issue that has anything to do with this race. It's not something that would be readaddressed.
So you're saying as governor,
the legislature and the voters of Maryland have already made that decision.
So
as governor, I'll have to take an oath to uphold the laws that are on the books.
So you would not, you're not looking to reintroduce that battle over marriage equality in the state of Maryland?
No.
Okay, just want to be clear. That's what should be clear. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's talk a bit about a bunch of issues here that I think that are facing the state of Maryland, and they go around. There's all these kind of conflicting things about where jobs are created and where they're not created. I've been trying to read all these things over the last several months, and it depends on who you want to become governor and which side of the aisle you fall on, whether we are doing well or not doing well. You look at the one side that says that Maryland recovered 81% of its jobs lost during the Bush administration, and that was the eighth fastest recovery in the nation. You look at another side that says we have lost more jobs than any other state in our region, and they're all going to Virginia. You look at another side that said job growth here remains ahead of Virginia's by 2.4% compared with 2.3%, and that the jobs created in Maryland are jobs that paid higher wages as opposed to jobs being created in Virginia, even if they were greater, paid lower wages. So, I mean, depending on which side you look at and which way you look at this question of jobs, it's easy to parse out in a partisan way. I don't think it's so easy to parse out when you're looking at it in a kind of a clear, objective way.
Well, it's these are issues that I've been completely focused on for almost 4 years with Change Maryland. And facts are facts. I mean, you can certainly interpret things differently, but some of the facts are pretty clear. As I mentioned earlier, compared to other states around the country, our unemployment rate is fairly low, and we owe that in large part because of the federal government presence we have here, which is greater than it is in just about any other state. But if you compare the beginning of the O'Malley administration to the end of the O'Malley administration, the numbers can't be changed. The fact is we've lost 6,500 businesses out of Maryland over the past 7.5 years. Unemployment is up 76%. We've lost over 80,000 jobs. And we've had the largest mass exodus of taxpayers fleeing our state of any state in the Mid-Atlantic region and one of the worst in the nation. 31,000 Marylanders have voted with their feet and headed for the exits. They took with them $1.7 billion a year out of our economy. The federal government just released its findings a week or so ago on GDP. We rank 49th out of 50 states in growth. That's a fact. It's not just political spin by one particular party or another.
Zero growth.
We've lost 26% of our manufacturing base and 25,000 manufacturing jobs. You know, CEO Magazine ranks us 41st out of 50 states in business friendliness. There's no way you can possibly look at this past 8 years and say that Maryland has done well economically. It's just not factual.
So when you look, let's go back to the phones. I have some other questions. 410-319-8888 before you run back to the bus and head for your next stop. 410-319-8888 as we talk with Larry Hogan and Boyd Rutherford, who are running to become the governor and lieutenant governor candidates for the Republican Party. The election is this Tuesday, and this is the last day of early voting.
Absolutely.
Right? Is this the last day?
And that's really why we're out running around on our bus. We're trying to encourage people to get out and vote. We'll be at the Honeygo Early Voting Center in Baltimore County today, but Boyd and I are trying to encourage every one of your listeners, regardless of their party affiliation, regardless of who they're voting for, we need to get them out to vote.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Before I come back to my questions, let me go. Well, let me read this email that came in first. Mike writes in, hello, Mr. Stein. I want to ask a question, Mr. Hogan. Bob. My question is that I very much like his message on business and taxes, but haven't read many specifics. What would he do to cut taxes for businesses so we can create jobs? Thank you for your time. Mike Bistrom.
Well, I think we talked about some of that earlier. We have a very specific plan, a detailed plan. We're the only ones who do. We've identified, we have people on the Democratic side who are talking about billions in new spending without talking about how to pay for it. And they've said, we don't really anticipate any new taxes, but we're going to increase spending by billions. We have some folks on the Republican side who said we're going to eliminate all the taxes, but we're not going to tell you how we're going to pay for it. We've done both. We've identified the $1.75 billion worth of initial findings on cuts, specific cuts that we're going to make. And then we're going to try to roll back as many of these 40 tax increases as we can because they've crushed our economy. It's what our whole plan has been about. It's what we've been focused on for years. Right. We have to get the government off our backs and out of our pockets so that we can grow the private sector, put people back to work, and turn our economy around.
So let me ask this question that has come up in a lot of conversations with most of these candidates. But the question has to do with what people call the rain tax or the stormwater runoff fees that were being taxed, whatever you want to call it. It's mm-hmm. money. But that was passed. The idea that the phosphorus management tool was put off once again by Governor Martin O'Malley's administration that would allow you to see what was running off our farms into the bay. And I know you two probably oppose the stormwater tax. Tell me, you can know about why, but I want to know what your alternative is in terms of how we clean up the bay itself.
Well, yeah, first of all, passed 2 years ago as a stormwater management fee, but we really, I think, coined the term rain tax and got tens of thousands of people engaged and involved in this issue. Many of the both Republican and Democratic candidates have backpedaled and changed their positions on it because it's extremely unpopular, probably the most unpopular of all the 40 tax increases. We would work to get rid of the rain tax as hard as we could. And that's one of the things we hear everywhere we go across the state.
Yeah, and one of the issues that's not being discussed is the fact that a lot of the sediment that comes into the bay and trouble with the bay comes from the Susquehanna and up at Conowingo Dam. So we could work with and push the Corps of Engineers to clean up those sediment ponds that are up there. When we have a major storm, a large percentage of that gunk comes over that dam and comes into the bay. So we shouldn't put all of the responsibility on Marylanders and particularly the Maryland farming community to try to clean up the bay. And so we need to work with the federal agencies, push back on EPA and say, EPA, get Pennsylvania and New York involved in this because there's only, approximately a mile of the Susquehanna that's in Maryland, but most of the sediment is coming from Pennsylvania and New York.
And it's 43% of the problem in the Chesapeake Bay, and we've done absolutely nothing to address it.
No, that's not quite true. I mean,
that's what the Chesapeake Coalition says.
Right, but I read this fairly thoroughly before you all came on the air, and that the reality is that the vast majority of pollutants in Chesapeake Bay come from our own farms, come from runoff from our cities and highways, not from Conowingo. The other 60% of it comes from our
right.
state, and even larger percentages of phosphorus, nitrogen, comes from this state of Maryland, 80%, not the 20% coming out of Conowingo. And so while you have to address Conowingo, everybody's saying, look, if we don't address this, it's going to be a disaster. There's no question that people say you have to address what's happening in Conowingo Dam, but the reality is that the majority of sediment that comes into our bay comes from the farms and municipalities in our communities. What do you do about that?
Well, obviously, cleaning up the bay is a priority, and it would be a priority for us. And we've done a ton of work already to try to address this issue, and the state has done a pretty good job. But guess what? We can't, as Boyd said, balance this entire problem on the backs of struggling Maryland families who've just been decimated with 40 consecutive tax hikes. The average Maryland family is now paying $4,600 more per year because of the O'Malley-Brown increases. We can't push another one on top of them. And we can't put the entire poultry industry. Our agriculture is our number one industry here in Maryland.
That's not true.
And poultry is the number one agricultural product in Maryland. And these phosphorus regs, most people have said, would decimate the entire poultry and grain industry on the Eastern Shore and would devastate an entire region of our state.
But what do we do is the question I have. I think that...
One of the things we can do is we can stop raiding the open space funds.
That's one of the things that this
current administration has been doing over the last several years. That's money that is supposed to be dedicated to such things as helping the Bay. Some of the Chesapeake Bay funds that have been raided as well. Those are things that could be done. And some of that the money can be used to assist the producers, the farmers out on the shore to plant the buffer crops and to be able to protect the tributaries that go into the bay. But, the big issue with the rain tax is it's the 40th tax. That's the big issue.
We pay sewer taxes.
We pay other fees associated and the open space funds that are supposed to go to the protection areas, and they're not going there.
Address the issue. The state tried to force counties to raise taxes for this. Carroll County pushed back and sued and said, we are going to address this without raising taxes. they're going to take care of out of existing budget priorities.
Right.
Which I'm not sure they've done, but that's another case.
Well, they're being held to account by the state. They've agreed to something with the state, and the state can come back if they don't.
We only have like a minute left, so I want to give you a chance to give your final thoughts and statements, how people can get to your campaign, volunteer, and vote. So what's your final thought?
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you having us on.
No, I love having you on.
Boyd and I would love to have your listeners consider voting for us, but they can find out more about us at HoganForGovernor.com or on Facebook/ChangeMaryland.
So where are your next couple of stops on the bus?
We're going to be all day today in Baltimore City and Baltimore County, and we got 10 or 12 stops and I think 3 more radio interviews, and we're going to keep busy.
All right.
But we don't want to leave. We're going to stay here for a little longer. You're trying to get rid of us.
No, I don't want to get rid of you.
Kicking us out. Come on, boy.
I know.
I'd love to have you stay.
We didn't even have time for a cup of coffee.
Oh, I can make you a cup of coffee. It's not a problem.
That's all right.
All right. Thank you very much.
Larry Hogan, Boyd Ruth, good to have you both here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Folks, vote. Today's the last day of early voting. Tuesday, vote if you don't vote in early voting.